Hey, property insiders, I'm Mike Stenhouse, and this is the Inside Property Investing Podcast. You are in the right place if you are an aspiring or existing investor looking to build a portfolio and a property business that works for you. And from this podcast, you're going to learn from all of my insights and advice from over a decade in the industry, as well as the lessons learned from hundreds of other successful investors. So you can listen to what worked for them and avoid what didn't. I hope you enjoy today's podcast, and whatever you're up to today, I hope you have a fantastic day. Thanks for listening. Six years ago, Philippa and Tom Charrier, the couple behind the amazing Fat Properties brand, first came on the IPI podcast to talk about their early days of investing in student HMOs up in Lancaster, my old university stomping ground. Then about 6 months after that, so about 5 years ago or so back in 2019, Tom came back on the podcast to announce that he was stepping away from his, at the time, full-time job to focus full-time on property. And we spoke all about that transition, the thought process that they had gone through to make sure that they were ready for it, and why he felt like now was the right time. Today, I am thrilled. I cannot tell you how excited I am to have them back. 5 years feels like, honestly, the blink of an eye since I last spoke to these guys. And we've kept in touch and I've followed their progress, but I cannot believe it has been so long since we had them on the show. And today they are back to talk us through what those last 5 years have looked like for them, for their business, and for the pivots that they are making away from, or not away from, but to include things beyond just student HMOs. They really focused in those early days on one single strategy that allowed them to specialize, to build up a really solid income base that they could rely on, that they could live off. And once they got to a certain level of comfort, of financial security, they were then able to start diversifying into exciting things like hotel conversions, grade two listed buildings, serviced accommodation, and some projects that they're really passionate about that will still make them money, but with a bit more comfort and a safety net behind them. So I'm sure you will learn a lot from this, whether you're just starting out or you're an experienced investor as well and thinking about what the next stage maybe looks like for you. So sit back, relax, enjoy. I'll speak to you soon. Well, I am thrilled to have not just one, but two of my favorite Charriers back in the podcast seat today. Philippa, it's been a while since we've had you on the show. It's been 6 years or so since, maybe not quite that, 5.5 years, something like that, since we last spoke. But I'm thrilled to have you back. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mike. Really lovely to be back again. I can't believe that's 6 years ago. It's
almost really depressing, right?
Well, it's quite scary, really, because I look at things in terms of my kids and my kids' ages, and our youngest is about to be 7. So she would have been, I remember the podcast, coming on the podcast, because I think it was the first podcast I had done about property. And I remember having to ask a friend to come and sit with our youngest. The other two were at school, and she came and sat with her youngest as well, and they were downstairs, and it was the first time I'd been apart from her. Everything was, so I just vividly remember this time of like, oh my goodness. So to me, so much, even just with that, you know, we've now got rid of her at school, so it's like amazing, so much has happened in such in a lifetime, her lifetime, really. It's 6 years, goodness.
Well, we'll come on to what's happened since then. But for anyone who hasn't come across you guys before, and we're obviously joined by Tom as well. Tom, I will come to you shortly, don't worry. But just as a brief recap for anyone who hasn't come across Mr. and Mrs. Charrier, the Fat Properties brand, just give me a quick overview of, you know, how you got started in investing, what your overall investment strategy or ethos is.
Sure. So, well, basically we started, my background's in architecture and Tom is in landscape architecture. So we've always been passionate about design, but we've really been passionate about the intersection of design and health. All the books we read, all our time is spent on sort of health or property. So combining the two seems sort of a natural thing to do. Now, when I talked about my youngest, we've got three children. So when I started being a parent with Tom, obviously, when we became parents, I had to obviously look at different routes, careers. Architecture wasn't going to be the right thing for me. So we started looking at property developing. I started property developing when in my 20s, when I was at university. I bought a flat that I lived in and let it out to pay for the mortgage. And so it sort of became a natural thing that we started looking at property developing. And at the stage, we had two children and we were looking at different ideas of property. Started looking at student accommodation. Now, at the time, I was pregnant with one and I had a toddler on my hip and I was going around all these student accommodation, student houses. And I just remember this utter feeling of being so horrified that these were young people that were living in these houses. Especially more so because I had a toddler and I was pregnant with my next one. And I was just thinking, these are people's children that are living in this accommodation. And they've just, it wasn't the fact that they were so dirty and, you know, not very nice. They were just cramming them in. So all these students were suddenly just being given tiny spaces with not much social spaces. And it just was a far cry from when I was at university. And when I was at university, I lived in complete dives, but at least I had the social space and I had the support of my friends.
Yeah.
So that was how many years ago? That when we started investing?
10 years ago.
So we bought our first property. Then we basically just carried on. And we could really feel that we could make a difference. There was a real gap in the market for well-designed student accommodation that really focused on the well-being of the students. So that's where we were. Sort of, and 6 years ago, I think we'd probably bought. I think we probably had 4 or 5 properties there.
Mm-hmm. We'd been going very slowly at first, hadn't we? Slowly and gently, and then we decided, right, this is, you know, this is a business. We both had kind of entrepreneurial drive, didn't we? And we wanted to, you know, we wanted to run our own business. So we thought, right, let's double down on this. And
you were still working. I was, I was predominantly looking after the children. And this was my new business, wasn't it? Mm. The houses. So we had the 4. I was managing the properties. Mm-hmm. We were doing everything. We were doing all the refurbishment. Everything was us, wasn't it, really? Just working on it. And you were working full time. But then out of hours, and I just remember that time so vividly. It was just lack of sleep. We were up with the kids. We were trying to push the business forward. We were just, but it was so exciting. It was such an exciting time, wasn't it? We saw a gap in the market. Students were loving it. We had students queuing up for our properties. Mm-hmm. We then had investors that were really keen on investing with us, and we were just. We just didn't have enough properties, did we, to meet the supply? So, which was fantastic, but it was so exciting, such an exciting time. And we could really see what the difference we were making to the students' lives, you know, living in these properties that were using our architectural design backgrounds to actually create spaces which, you know, enhance their well-being. And we were, you know, we were getting feedback from the students, getting feedback from the parents, you know, how much they love living there. Students, you know, the parents saying how much of a difference it made to their well-being from living in these spaces. And it was just brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So from then on, we've just continued to grow that and moved into different areas, still with the same ethos of having, you know, of property and design, the intersect with health and well-being.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny, it's always held a special place in my heart. I studied at Lancaster where you guys invest. I've seen probably some of the houses that you've seen in their kind of pre-renovation condition. And this wasn't that long ago, right? Like maybe, well, I'm going to age myself here, but, you know, I guess probably closer to 15 years now. And yeah, just thinking back to some of the houses my friends were living in, like it wasn't a great thing. Have you seen overall standards improve since then? Are you still not necessarily unique, but would you say, you know,
sorry, I'd absolutely love to say that we're seeing standards improve, and they are, I'm sure they are, but we still go around a lot. We're always looking for property. We go around a lot of property, and we still see a lot of issues where people have got greedy. Landlords just squeezing as many students. You can understand it from a business side, but again, it doesn't really make financial sense, because okay, you can squeeze people in now, but they're not going to be happy, they're not going to stay, they're not going to pay the rent. It's just we see it a lot, don't we? But overall the standard is getting better.
I think there's, you know, the kind of social media bubble that we all operate in. We see each other's stuff and we're like, oh, everybody's doing fantastic stuff. Well, I think this generation of you know, us and you and our peers and everybody that's going to be listening to this and watching this, we're all doing, you know, good stuff, and the standards are raising. But like Phil says, you know, we're going around looking at kind of the old school, old guard investors who are starting to sell up now and retire. Mm-hmm. And there's still just some dreadful stuff. And again, you know, tinsy wincy little bedrooms, and I'm looking at it thinking, this is actually like, doesn't even meet council regs, let alone, you know, that's a low bar. So I think it's going to be a generational thing. You know, over the next 5 or 10 years, hopefully those better standards will widen and more people will start doing better stuff. So,
We're also looking at purpose built as well, because, you know, we haven't even said what we did in the last 6 years. We've written a book all about this because we were so passionate about this and wanted to get the message out there to inspire other property developers to actually think that it's not just about returns. It's about creating spaces where people are actually going to live. You know, these are young people. This is shaping their life. You know, we all know from COVID, you know, how much time we spent inside, but and the impact that has on us and our well-being. But, you know, with students, we're spending, you know, with everybody, we're spending 90% of our time inside. So that impact of our surroundings on our mental health is huge. And we've got 50% of young people going into higher education. And at the moment, you know, the statistics are really high. It's like 2/3 of students are being diagnosed with mental health disorders.
Wow. That number is terrifying.
That's huge. And that's, you know, that's really, it just hits home when we're parents, as you are. You know, these are kids. These are people's children that are living in our houses. And, you know, it's not just about returns. It's our duty to create spaces where they can thrive. And, you know, you can hear my voice. I'm so passionate about this. This is why we wrote a book. You know, we want to just get the message out there that, you know, it is. I think it comes back from our design backgrounds. We were designing spaces to enhance people's well-being for people, spaces for people. And then, you know, once we started looking at student accommodation and going into the student houses, and you're thinking, what is going on here? This isn't having the same level of attention. Nobody's thinking about these students, but then you're having all these headlines in newspapers about students, and 1 in 6 don't have friends, you know, proper friendship groups. And it's just, you know, and you're thinking, why is nobody looking at the accommodation? You know, why is nobody linking this? And it goes for purpose built as well. You know, we're looking at purpose built accommodation and the same standards. They can look all flashy, but again, it's sort of breaking it down and just looking at how people are interacting, how people are using these spaces, and the impact that's having on them.
Well, I'm not, by any stretch, please believe me here, I'm not dismissing that. That aspect of we should make better homes because it's the right thing to do. But I think for some people, they maybe need to think about it from a business point of view, first of all. And you mentioned that business case, right? Like the fact that you kind of understand more rooms in some ways theoretically might mean more profit. How do you justify that, if you do at all, the idea of making less profit? Does it mean that you need to negotiate more aggressively on purchase prices or kind of manage your renovations more effectively? Or do you just accept that the cost of creating these better places to live is maybe a lower return on investment on your own portfolio?
I suppose just to clarify, you know, the priority should be making better homes. But when you come to the business case, you take any other business, what's the best way to have a profitable business? It's to make the best product, right? Because the more people are going to want it, there'll be more demand. Yep. You know, it's going to be a good, fair price point. I'm not saying you should overcharge, but, you know, it's going to be at the top of the, you know, top of the price point. And actually, that's exactly what we find, which is, you know, better designed properties do better, certainly do better in the long run. You know, the amount of houses that we look at to purchase, and you think, I bet this looked great on a spreadsheet 5, 10, 15 years ago. And guess what? Now you're selling, and you're selling at a bit of a discount because it's not doing so well anymore. You know, the spreadsheet is necessary, and you've got to you know, hit the returns that you need to hit. But most of property lives off the spreadsheet in the real world, right? So actually, you know, we invest a lot in design and fixing things out. That doesn't mean places have to be, you know, very expensive to do. It doesn't mean they need all the bells and whistles and it has to be, you know, kind of budget breaking. It can be done, you know, within a perfectly reasonable, you know, budget, set at a fair price point. And actually, you know, our experience is that financially and business-wise, they do much better. You know, the better designed houses we have, the better they do. Simple as that.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you said that because, you know, with the student market, I wasn't sure if it translated the same way where you've got tenants in there typically for, you know, a fixed-term tenancy collectively. Maybe your void periods look different to the professional market where we operate. But I absolutely see that as well. You know, if we're looking at a 9-bedroom HMO and it's kind of squeezed, even though that looks better on a spreadsheet on day one, the reality is that probably setting that up as an 8-bed with more communal space is going to result in longer tenancy durations, so lower, you know, lower turnover, less void periods, shorter void periods. Overall, the 8-bed probably performs better than the 9-bed, even though that extra profit or the extra income from that 9th bed makes the spreadsheet look a little better. The reality doesn't work like that.
100%.
So you mentioned the book that you've written as well since we spoke. This came out in around 2020, I think. So, you know, but yeah, 2 years after we spoke, Designed for Wellbeing by Philippa and Tom Charrier. And I guess this goes into a lot of what you're passionate about and talking about now. Again, you know, thinking about it from practical applications for our audience, what were some of the most important or biggest takeaways from that you think investors should be paying attention to?
I think it's invest, you know, if we're going to summarize it without getting into the kind of the nuts and bolts, it's really just investing time in the design process. You know, it doesn't need to cost a lot of money. It does require a considered thought process. And I think when you, you know, apply some kind of, you know, common sense design principles that are kind of tried and tested, and you invest the time in doing that, then you're going to end up with a better result. And that's the same across, again, the same across any industry. So I think that's the
I think it's
the high level thing.
I think really going back to it, being parents is looking at an investment property. If you are parents, if you're, you know, even if you're not parents, you know, is somebody's got to live in this space? Are you happy to let your child live in this space? Are you happy? Would you live in this space? You know, if they're, you know, coming back at late at night, you know, walking along, entering this house, would you feel happy for your child to do this? I think a lot of the, I mean, it's basic design principles in the book, isn't it? I mean,
and
not,
talk to me about that, because you guys are a little bit, you know, you've got a competitive advantage. You both come from design backgrounds. So, you know, if one or two of the design principles that you see lay people like me without a design background miss that make a big impact, like where do you get the biggest bang for your buck from a design point of view?
There's a kind of hierarchy of kind of design considerations. You know, location obviously is certainly a big one. I think generally speaking, property investors are kind of across that in terms of, you know, nearby amenities and green space and streetscape and safety and things like that. And then we've got internal layout, so just making sure that the fundamental spaces are right and there's enough, you know, and that could go for a property as a whole, or it could go for a room. You know, again, coming away from simply a plan and actually going there in real life and thinking, okay, you know, is there the, you know, is there the headspace in this room? You know, have we got stairs going up, or you know, the pitch of an attic room or something like that? Is it that going to impinge on upon it? You know, can we get our furniture in? But can we, you know, can we move around the furniture? Do we have to be opening and closing the door to get around the door, and, you know, pushing the chair in under the desk to get around the, the kind of desk and the chair? Yeah. Lots of simple things like that. And then thinking about, again, lots of research. And we really wanted to make it kind of research backed. Lots of research about productivity and, you know, the psychology of kind of study. And thinking about, okay, if you've got a student room or any HMO room, really, if you have a desk there, if it's a professional or a student's going to work, where is the desk going to go? Now, if you've got it next to the window with natural light, that's going to increase your productivity. Just doing that can increase your productivity by, I think, 15%. Because, you know, when you have your kind of blinkers on, you're looking down at your desk, you're looking at your laptop or whatever, you go into a kind of focused mindset. And as soon as your eyes perceive a wider panorama and physically a wider view and a longer distance view, your cortisol levels lower, so your kind of stress reduces, and all these teeny little mini breaks that you don't even notice, but they're going on in your brain, it's kind of evolutionary thing, actually mean that you can study that a little bit longer, that a little bit harder, concentrate a little bit more. So again, you know, there's lots of these things that sound very simple, but when you start adding them up, you know, you can say, okay, well, you know, we can really engineer this place, this bedroom, this workspace, this lounge, this kitchen, to really just get the most out of it. Conversely, if you're not thinking about those or not aware of those things, you could accidentally engineer a place that's really missing a lot of low-hanging fruit in terms of how someone is going to feel and how they're going to perform, whether they are wanting to study or relax or socialize or cook and eat together. You know, breakfast bars and dining tables are a kind of common one. I think a breakfast bar or an island is great. A dining table for sitting down and eating together is always better. And a breakfast bar against a wall, you know, if you imagine, anyone listening is not going to get this, but you know, a breakfast bar against a wall looks fantastic, but would you ever, by choice, line up and face a wall next to people to eat instead of sitting around more communally and eating? So again, you know, I think the advent of, you know, social media and Instagram and stuff like that is fantastic, and people are getting so much inspiration from all these things. But, you know, we're not designing to look flashy on Instagram, right? We're designing for people to use spaces. So,
Just going backwards, what we started with the book was really defining what well-being was, and we were breaking that up, and we went through a whole process of what the definition of well-being was and how we could link that with students, because obviously with all these statistics of, you know, 50% of students going into higher education and then, you know, the mental health issues, which is just phenomenal. And then basically taking that, and then we had the definition, then we broke that into the four F's, wasn't it? The focus, fitness, friendship, finance. So we thought that if you have those four F's, that makes up for well-being. And then how many years ago? 3-4 years ago. And I'm like, what did we write our book about? and it was, so we took that and we aligned those focus, friendship, finance and fitness, didn't we? And it was all to do with how we design our homes related to
I love that. It. And you said something interesting there, Tom. You know, and I think this is probably the crux of it for a lot of people. You mentioned, like, you accidentally end up with something that's poorly designed. I don't think, I mean, there's absolutely some rogue landlords out there, right? Like, I'm not excusing them at all, but I think for a lot of people, it's just not paying that attention to the process and not paying attention to it enough early in the process. A lot of people leave, oh, well, I'll worry about furniture layouts and things like that until, you know, when it gets to that kind of final stage. But you need to be thinking about all of this from day one to make sure the whole thing flows together, I guess.
100%. You know, if you think about furniture, you could think, oh, well, I'll design it later. But what about your power?
Yep.
You know, your infrastructure, you know, again, you're coming back to, you know, desks and workspaces.
Running cables across the floor, not being able to turn the light off. And yeah.
Precisely. You know, you don't want to end up with kind of, you know, extension cord spaghetti and things like that. So, you know, people, I think if you relate it to, you know, if you think about fitness or diet or nutrition, you know, it would be very easy to accidentally end up when you're busy and stressed, not paying attention to this stuff and eating rubbish and not exercising. And if you pay attention to it, you can think, actually, I can design a bit of a, you know, a regime that actually is going to see me much better. And people can relate to that, right? I think it's exactly the same with design. Just invest the time. You know, it doesn't need to be complicated or hard, but it needs some time. It needs some consideration. And, you know, if you do that, you're going to be, you know, 90% of the way there. And you end up, you're going to end up with a, you know, a better place. People enjoy more. And, you know, bottom line, you're going to do better from a business point of view. You're going to earn more money.
Love it. Okay. The second time, I mean, I feel like we're kind of well past the introduction now, but the second time you guys came on the podcast, well, it wasn't actually both of you. It was just you, Tom. And what date did we say it was again? Was it early 2019? So about 5 years ago, actually, 5 years ago, yesterday or the day before at the time of recording this. And the reason that you came back was you were just on the brink. Philip, you mentioned that you at this point were kind of full-time, you know, parent/property business. So, you know, you were kind of out of the corporate race at this point. Tom, you were still very much doing that, but this was the point where you were ready to transition into working full-time on the business as well. And you came on the podcast maybe a little bit cheekily, but I think it was all done in good taste, right? Just before you handed in your notice, and then we held off on releasing it until you had made that announcement public. But I'm curious how that process has been. If you could just remind us to start with, what made you feel like that was the right time for you to make the jump as well?
I think it was, I mean, it'd been in our kind of roadmap for a while. It was, right, let's build up Fat Properties, let's take it seriously, and, you know, I will then leave work and we'll both be in the business and drive it forward. And we'd been working with some new investors and some new clients, and I was just saying yes to everything. Yeah, more work, more projects, which was great. I was still working full time, and I remember, I don't know if you remember this.
I do.
I remember we had a, you know, a heated discussion, let's call it, one evening, you know, in the bedroom, and Phil, because I was saying yes to everything, and then, you know, yeah, I was working early hours in the morning and then going off to work, and then working in the evening, but the daytime, obviously it was all Phil. And Philip had just said, listen, if you want to keep saying yes to stuff, go and resign. Yeah.
Or leave me.
and I said, right, yeah, I thought about it. I was like, yeah, you know what, you're right. Okay, fine. And literally the next day, all the directors were in the office, and I just thought, right, this is it. Let's do it. So I, handed my notice in.
But it was huge. It was huge for you.
The build up to it was huge. It was literally stressful and time because of all the work we were doing. But it felt like, oh my God, is this the right decision? You know, I've got a salary and, you know, we've got a mortgage and kids and multiple mortgages and kids and stuff like that. Is this the right thing to do? Am I being foolish? And some people were saying, great, go for it. And some people were saying, oh, really? You're gonna hand your notice in? What are you doing? And I have to say, from the second I handed my notice in, I just felt like this weight lifted off my shoulders and I was free. And there was no more stress. There's not been one second where I've looked back. And every now and then, we haven't done it in a while, but every now and then you ask me, like, are you glad you did it? Any regrets? There's never been a millisecond, despite, you know what it's like running your business. It's a roller coaster ride, and there were some stressful periods and there's some sleepless nights, but there's never been one second of regret. It was definitely the right decision.
Was it the right time?
Who knows? It was the only time. That was just the time. And, you know, I don't think we could have done it look, maybe we could have done it a little bit earlier. It definitely couldn't have waited.
Yeah, I guess.
But it was crunch point.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, yeah, I'm always curious to have this conversation because I think people often get into property because they want that freedom. They want that to become their full-time job. And it doesn't need, I feel I get your point, you know, Tom's throwing a lot of projects at you, but in the early days, if you're doing one project at a time, it's not a full-time job, right? And I see people jumping too soon sometimes, and it's trying to get that balance right. When is the right time to quit? I don't think there's a perfect answer. I think in your case, it's great that one of you had more time to focus on it. I'm always reluctant to say that you were full-time Phil with the kids, right? That's a busy, hectic job as well. But you've also got that salary. If there's two of you working on it, if one of you can stay and one of you can do it full-time, ideal. Not the case for everyone, but yeah, it's just nice to get there's so many different approaches to it. I'm just curious to hear your thoughts about it.
It was full on, wasn't it? I mean, just looking back, just thinking back again, back to this podcast when we were on the last time, it was just that whole, you know, all hours. I mean, we were, you know, 4 hours sleep probably at the most every night. It was just relentless, wasn't it? It was just three kids. But then it was just so exciting. And I remember just surviving on 4 hours. But obviously you can't do that for forever. You're building something up. But it was our baby. You know, it was our Fat Properties was our baby. And it was like, we are going to make this work. So we put everything into it. And then obviously with a passion, you know, it's a passion. It's something that we're so passionate about that it's going to work, you know. And then we had students and parents wanting to, you know, live, or not the parents, but the students wanting to, they would have done, our kids wanted to live in our houses, don't they? You know, that it just was working, you know, something we were doing was working, which was great, you know, it's exciting.
And are you getting more than 4 hours sleep a night now?
Oh, love it.
Good, yes. Glad to hear it.
Now the kids are, you see, that's the thing. As the kids are sleeping more, we end up sleeping more.
Yeah, I got that to look forward to. Although I've got a bit more heartache ahead of me, I'm sure, with the sleep. But I'm literally just banking it just now, thinking I've got, you know, counting down the days, you know, partially until baby number two arrives, partially until sleep goes out the window again for 6 or 12 months. Yeah, so,
but so exciting.
Yeah, and I can't wait. 5 years. I mean, a lot has happened. You know, we said it's been a long time. And I remember thinking, even in those maybe 6 to 12 months between you both coming on and then Tom coming back, you'd done a heck of a lot. So the fact that it's been 5 years since then, what has been keeping you busy since then? Has it been more of the same, or have you diversified at all?
Yeah, so we've built up the student portfolio. We've done that for ourselves. We've done that with kind of joint venture partners and with some clients. We have a kind of select number of clients as well. And we've done that. In student accommodation is still very much the core of the business. Probably a couple of years ago, we diversified. We thought, you know what, let's try an Airbnb. So we got a house and did it as a, you know, reasonably kind of high-end Airbnb. That went really well. We then have done a couple of serviced apartments and some kind of got more into the city centre, really. So we've got some kind of retail space, service departments. We've bought a pub, which was a arduous planning process, but we finally got consent and to redevelop the pub and develop service departments above it. We're developing a small boutique hotel, which is super exciting. So we've moved into the kind of service accommodation and leisure space as well. It's really all the same. It's the same ethos, right? It's kind of design, you know, property design, well-being, it's that kind of interface again. So, yeah, it's exciting.
How do you find that move away from kind of the cookie-cutter approach of student HMOs in Lancaster? We know the area really well. We know the property type and architecture really well. We know what a renovation process is going to look like, what the budget is going to be more or less into. Like, everything you're talking about there, super exciting, but each project is kind of unique in a way. Does that add complex? I mean, you sound thrilled about it, but it's going to add some challenges as well.
Basically, this is our background, regenerating high streets. So this is so exciting that we're working in this, because this is what we did, you know, for our day jobs years and years ago. So we're going back to that, and to now that we're the developers on this, this is very exciting, and we're able to impact not just the students in the houses, but we're actually able to impact on, you know, communities, and that's really exciting, isn't it?
So that I want
to talk about that, because I find that a really interesting topic as well. And I think it's great that you have that passion beyond just, you know, your portfolio, the impact that portfolio has on the surrounding area. But before I do, let me ask you a question about your corporate experience, your training, your skill set that you both have. You know plenty of other people in the property world. You're well connected. You network. You see lots of successes of people who don't come from architecture and design backgrounds, but how much has that given you an advantage? Has it helped you stand out from the crowd? Has it helped you achieve more than you could have done without it? I'm curious to know, like, do you think that what you have done would have been possible without that background?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm curious to know which way you go, because I think, you know, both are an interesting point. I think you need to.
I think, at the end of the day, you know, university is, you're just learning. I mean, it's whether you choose to go to university and to learn all about this stuff, you could be, you know, I don't know. I mean, Tom's looking at me like, what? We're supporting university students. I think if you're passionate about it and you're interested, if you're interested in it, I mean, it's all very well working on something and you're not really passionate or you're not really interested. Am I making sense? No.
I don't know. I think, could we? I mean, it's impossible to compare, isn't it? Right? Because we only know the kind of path that we've trodden. It's certainly, there are aspects of it. Again, from a design point of view, we naturally come at it with how do we solve this design problem? So that feels natural to us, and we might have learnt some lessons a harder way had we not come at it with that background. You know, when we do projects now, you know, more complex projects, they're needing planning and they're needing different structuring. Again, that feels natural to us. We're perfectly comfortable in the planning world with all those things and all those variables. So I think it's made things a lot more comfortable, and it's hopefully guided us along a path that has worked for us. Of course, other people with other experience, you know, would come at it with different strengths, and they would tread a different path, and those strengths would be fantastic for them. So
very diplomatic, Tom.
Well, you only know what you know, right? So, you know, maybe we're missing out on something massive. I don't know. It doesn't feel like it, but of course, you know.
I think working together as well is useful. I mean, we're both very creative, but then you're very much more numbers driven than I am. Mm-hmm. So I think working together is actually, you know, is good. But we have actually had a similar sort of creative background, but then.
I think fundamentally you're aligned on kind of where we're going.
Yeah, I get it. And I think it must have given you an advantage. I'm not going back on what I've said in the past. I think this builds upon it. But when I talk about, for me, the most important skills as the owner of a property business, I think if you can find the deals, so make sure you've got a good pipeline of deals. If you can find the capital, either through conventional sources, creative offering, private finance, you know, however you choose to fund that, and you can lead and manage people, I think they're three of the most important skills. And I think this design fits into that first one of being able to find good deals. It's not just about the numbers or negotiating, but being able to walk into a building and seeing value that other people can't, seeing a way that you can bring it back to life, make it an important part of that community, a great place for people to live. Like, I think design is such a fundamental piece of deal sourcing and building up a pipeline that it must have given you benefits, and it's something that I think even without an architectural background we can all improve upon that by paying more attention to design as a you know, kind of an important facet of what we do.
The
serviced accommodation, so I mentioned Lancaster was where your student portfolio was based. Am I right in thinking that first house you bought was more towards the Lake District, or did I make that up?
No, it's in Lancaster as well.
So have you kept everything within that same geography, or have you expanded beyond that at all?
Everything is currently within Lancaster. We did, we got very close with the project in Preston not so long ago. That didn't work out in the end, but that would have been a good big one. And we are actively looking, I suppose, we are looking at expanding. The other thing that I neglected to mention when we were talking about what we've been doing. So last summer we bought a kind of HMO portfolio, and we're looking at other HMO portfolios with our joint venture partners. And that's a fantastic way to scale, right? Because, you know, why do one project at a time when you could do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? So we are doing that. And of course, there are portfolios available in Lancaster, and we're also looking at other cities as well. So they're, you know, they bring, you know, different challenges. But certainly a lot of opportunity. You know, the one that we acquired in joint venture in the summertime, you know, none of those needed major refurbs, but we've certainly improved them, turned them around, added a lot of value, and, you know, increased the rent roll. And, you know, that's fantastic. So we look at that and we think, well, that's a great model. So we're looking, you know, actively looking to do more of those. And we're actually kind of in the process of looking at a specific portfolio at the moment, which, you know, I'm not sure if it'll come off or not.
Exciting, though.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I was just looking there at the population of Lancaster, because I always remember it being a fairly small place. It's about 50,000, so it's amongst the smaller cities in England. It must be at that size. You know, there's a lot of good things going for it. Obviously, there's the university there, predominantly campus based, but a lot of the students move off campus for later years. And a very good university from a reputational point of view.
It is. It's consistently top 10.
It's close to the Lake District. Like, you know, there is a good, I guess, tourism base there as well.
There is.
So from a move into serviced accommodation, did you find that was a relatively easy option for you from a management point of view? Diversification. Did it feel risky at the time when you made that decision?
It didn't feel risky. We were, you know, the first one we did was one house, and it was a pilot project, you know, dipping our toes in the water, and it went really, really well. We actually got more, I thought we'd have a kind of bigger sway towards business travellers, but we get, you know, certainly the majority are leisure, you know, tourists. So, and it went really, really well. And from a management point of view, it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't overly onerous, you know, with the right systems in place and the right apps and the right tech and the right team, obviously. You know, we have a fantastic ops manager and kind of people below her. So
it works.
It runs like a dream. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I mean, I think with everything that we've done, we've always, before we go out to investors, we always want to try everything that we do before we can. So we basically, with HMOs, we did our own portfolio, checking it works so that we're able to do that with our holiday accommodation. Same again, we wanted to try the market, check it works, and then we can go to investors. And that's really how it worked. With the students, again, it works quite well because obviously you've got parents that come to visit the students, you've got students that come in to look at
for open days and things like that, I guess.
You've got that market as well. But then you've got, what have you got near? You've got Morecambe, that's nearby. You've got the Lake District. We get lots of people coming up for the Lake District.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, it seems like a, you know, because we live around here, it seems like a slightly longer distance. But, you know, people coming up from London are like, oh, it's right next door to the Lake District. Fantastic. And really it is. But yeah, there's two national parks, there's two AOMBs, all within an absolute stone's throw. So it's, you know, it actually does really well.
Nice. And you mentioned your team there. I think you said you've got an ops manager in place. I guess it sounds as though it's not just the two of you running the show anymore. In actual fact, when we first spoke, I think you were just on the brink of hiring your first VA. So I'm curious to know how that has expanded over time as well.
Yeah, we seemed to cycle through a few VAs, didn't we? We kind of struggled to find the right one. But yeah, no, we hired a absolutely fantastic operations manager 18 months ago, something like that, I think, who is absolutely brilliant. She, you know, it's funny, we were talking about who would be the ideal person that we would need? And we were kind of saying, I remember as we were in the car, like, oh, she'd have worked here, or they would have worked here or there. And I'd have had this experience and that experience. And literally, I think a week later,
she emailed.
Someone contacted us and said, hey, this is my experience, this is my CV, this is what I've done, this is where I'm at the moment. She was managing big PBSA blocks. And she said, look, you know, I know you guys, I'd love to come and work for you. And we were like, oh, man, she's literally... It was like she'd had a bug in the car and she'd heard everything we'd said. And yeah, she's wonderful.
This is the hardest part of the business, hasn't it? To be growing it.
People.
Employing has been the hardest part, hasn't it? Because also, you know, this has been our baby and it's, you know, we were managing, we were doing absolutely everything. So it was very hard to let this part go, the operation side of it, because we wanted to give that level of attention. You know, we had WhatsApp messages with all the students. I knew every single student. I knew everything about them. They could phone anytime, day or night. And to actually move myself away from this has been a big thing to do, and our ops manager now has just been absolutely brilliant with
she's 100% carried on the same ethos of what we're about, but she's also completely changed, you know, how we deliver that and, you know, the systems and processes that she's put in place. So, you know, she's, you know, on a kind of personnel level, she's fantastic. On a business level, she's fantastic. So that's great. And then there's kind of, you know, cleaners and handymen and stuff like that. We certainly would be getting a lot less sleep if we didn't.
Got you.
And everything else, yeah. I mean, this is everything that we were doing initially to grow the business. So it's great.
You've mentioned investment, third party investment a few times as well, joint ventures, and I think you used some kind of debt based financing as well. I'm curious how much of that, I mean, we could talk, it's a whole separate topic to go into to raising finance, but specifically, I think you alluded at the start that your emphasis on design, well-being, creating great places to live, I think you said that has had an impact on investor attraction for you.
Yeah, we've actually never gone out and sought investors or clients or anything like that. People have always contacted us, and I suppose we have then gone through a process of, you know, this kind of courtship process of trying to understand, okay, what are you about? Are we on the same page? Is this going to work? And we've kind of sifted through, you know, people, not to kind of sound arrogant about it, but we've just made sure that, look, is this a relationship that's going to work? And are we both going to get something out of it, you know, that we value? And yeah, it's definitely, I think, articulating what we're about openly and honestly has been key to that, because some people hear it and don't like it, and that's fine, and some people hear it and do like it, and that's fine as well. So
talk to me about that, because that piece is really, you know, something I think a lot of people struggle with, the idea of when they're thinking about finance, having to go out and ask for money. You've not had to do that, which is great. People will then be asking, well, how the heck did they find you? Was that through social media? Was it through the book? What's been most valuable for you in terms of building the Fat Properties brand and having people want to work with you?
It's being authentic. I think we started talking about it on Instagram, talking about us, talking about our values. Mm-hmm. And then people have contacted us from then, being on your podcast. We had people approach us, didn't we?
Articles in the media.
Oh, articles
and press,
in the media.
Property media.
The book.
General press. Socials has been a big thing.
But the one of the big investors was actually from one of the students that was living in one of our properties. It was somebody that she knew, and it was her dad's, someone her dad worked with, and it was basically, they contacted us because they liked what we do. They saw it in house, exactly what we were doing, through the daughter, and that was great.
They literally contacted us and said, you know, in a nutshell, we've got money, we don't have any time, don't bother us, let's just do a project together. yeah, okay. it didn't quite work like that, but yeah, but socials have been, yeah, have been a big one as well.
Yeah, and it is, amazingly, you know, we have had quite a lot of people, and when we've actually spoken to them, there's not been the fit. They've not been. Yeah. We work out, you know, from one call, actually, you're not gonna. It's yeah. not gonna work. Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
And it saves it. And then other people. Best for them as well.
Yeah, other people that we work with, you think, actually, you know, we really would get on, and we do get on, you know, and we really get on with our investors, and you know, the people that you go to the pub with, they would be your friends. So. I think you've got to have that relationship, haven't you? You've got to get on with your investors. You've got to get in.
Yeah, certainly the way we run things is, you know, we have close relationships with these people. So if we're not going to get on, then that's going to be a problem. It's funny. I know what you said. I remember before any of this happened, I'd hear on podcasts and read like, oh, there's loads of money out there. You've just got to like, it'll find you. I was thinking, what the hell are you talking about? And there's no money finding me. What's going on? And then, lo and behold, you know, actually the first investor we got was actually our brother-in-law, wasn't it? So they were over from America. He's an American. They were over on Christmas. I was just chatting to him. Absolutely no thought of pitching anything. We were just chatting over lunch. And then later he said, look, this sounds great. You know, my business is doing well. I've got some spare cash. Can I invest in a project, please? And it was just this kind of light bulb moment of like, okay, so you're interested in what we do and it sounds good to you. You're a successful person. Fantastic. There must be more people out there like you. And this has come about by a very relaxed, normal, very open conversation about the highs and the lows and the pros and the cons and how things work and what the results are. So let's just try and do that more. Let's try and do that at scale, i.e. through socials, through media, and just try and put that out there and just see what happens. And again, you know, I think the people who are interested in it will, you know, will get in contact if, you know, if
and
they
the
hear
other
it.
Thing that media will be, we were contacted by the Sunday Times to do an article, weren't we, for all about student accommodation. So I mean, it's just talking about your values, talking about what you're interested in, talking about who you are, and you know, and people are watching, you know, if you're doing it on socials, even though they don't contact you or send, you know, or like your picture or whatever, there are people that are watching. They're watching in the background. And then when something happens, maybe they'll contact. Mm. So it doesn't always be, you know, everybody's getting into your DMs all the time. It's actually just, you know, there are people watching.
Yeah, I think that's great. And, you know, the piece that you said there about your values and your mission, I think is so important. There needs to be something. If you do something that is unique, that's interesting, that's different, that is what draws people in. And I think you guys are absolutely doing that, right?
Yeah. You've got to be passionate and you've got to enjoy what you do, haven't you? I mean, life is too short for, you know, for nonsense. You know, you've just got to do what you want to do, haven't you? And you've got to enjoy what you do. And I think if you start talking about things that, you know, you're passionate about, then, or doing the things that you're passionate about.
Yeah, I think people that will resonate with the right people.
For sure. We're getting towards the end of our time, but I just want to ask if you're okay to talk about it for a few minutes about your latest project, because I think that's super exciting. And possibly, I don't know from maybe a financial point of view, but it feels like it's one of the biggest undertakings that you have been working on.
It is certainly it's not the biggest one purely from a financial point of view, but it certainly feels like it from a project, you know, it's something new for us. And, you know, obviously we've done the student stuff, we've done service departments. This is, again, slightly different. It's a boutique hotel, so it's a grade two listed building right in the kind of historic quarter of Lancaster. Beautiful building. And we're going to turn it into a little seven-bed boutique hotel. So lobby space on the ground floor, seven bedrooms. Yep.
Any catering or not?
No catering, but we are in discussion. There's a kind of award-winning restaurant and kind of food place very, very, very close by. And we're talking to them about a possible partnership. And we're not doing catering. We're keeping it simple. It's going to live or die on the finish, you know, the quality, the experience, the design, the experience of people when they come. So it's certainly the biggest project in terms of just getting every single detail nailed. You know, from a construction point of view, it's not complex. Structurally, it's been pretty simple. There's been a few things to put right. We've certainly had some much more complex structural problems. We've got all that out of the... So the stage we're at, we got an option to buy it subject to planning. We got planning, we bought it. We have started on site and we are... we're kind of almost at the first fix point for plumbing and electric. So, like I say, it's a kind of testing execution of the design and the detail and the finishing.
Got you. What was it that made you think, yeah, let's do a hotel? I guess there's some economies of scale there, which makes it interesting. It's not dissimilar to running multiple service departments, although I guess they will just be a room, like a bed, like more of a hotel, so a bedroom rather than a full apartment. But what was the kind of thought process behind scaling in that direction?
I suppose we, you know, a while ago, whilst we are looking at expanding out with the student stuff, we had kind of had a discussion a while ago, hadn't we, saying, okay, what's the next step for us? Do we expand purely geographically with exactly the same product, or do we expand on the same patch with different projects? And certainly part of it was like, look, this is a new exciting project and we love doing new exciting projects. So that made sense. It seemed like a logical next step. Part of it was like, wow, look at this building. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. building. We got it, frankly, for a steal, didn't we? When we look at the price we bought it for and you think, well, it's a lot of building for the price we got it for. What can we do with this? It would make perfect sense. It has a little boutique hotel.
And it's great for the surrounding. You know, there are lots of cafes, there are lots of bars. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to create, catering within it. We want them, the visitors to go out mm. and experience Lancaster and go and see all these amazing eateries and museums and restaurants and go further and support the local economy.
It's kind of scratching our own itch, really, because I think, well, when we go somewhere, what do we want? We want a really nice place to stay. You know, obviously it's got to have a fantastic bed, fantastic shower. We want the design to be considered. We don't want to spend an arm and a leg, it's got to be accessible. Do we eat in the kind of hotel place? Mm-hmm. Not really. Actually, I want to always find, when we go away, I'm like, I want to get a local recommendation from a local on where's the best coffee, where's the best place to go and have lunch or whatever. So, yeah, that's what it's about.
And you've spoken about community there. You mentioned it in the past as well. How much of an impact do you feel like you guys have had on Lancaster? How invested do you now feel in the community? I suppose it's one downside of investing all within the same geographies. You get really bought into that location, right? And you want to see it do well. You get to know the other business owners. Do you feel like you are part of that scene now? Are you involved in the overall regeneration, if there is any regeneration going on in Lancaster?
Yeah, I think so. I think what's fun, again, Philippa was mentioning in our previous kind of life, we do these projects where they have took a very long time to come to fruition, these big kind of regeneration master plans. We're doing things at a smaller scale now, building by building, but we see it through from, unused wreck. The hotel had been sat empty it was a shop before we got it, had been sat empty for at least a year, maybe 2 years, doing nothing on the high street. And now we are going to be instrumental in turning that around and literally having an impact on that street. And now we're getting them, there's this street and there's that street and there's this street. So I think so, yeah. I think we definitely...
Yeah, I mean, basically our ethos, it goes back into our communities, and we support, we employ local people, our trades, our materials, sustainability, everything is all local. And we try and, that goes from everything, doesn't it? All the products we use in our service accommodation are... we're supportive. We're constantly looking at local and supporting, the local economy. We actually did a we worked out, didn't we, how much our construction projects were actually supporting the local economy.
Yeah, I think there was this kind of nationally recognised figures on this, which is the you know, the kind of economic impact of construction spending, and we kind of worked out that not just this one project, but across all our projects, we're going to create about 250 jobs. That's not 250 people employed by us, but the money we're spending in the economy, in the supply chain, which then feeds out to, you know, the builders' yards and the people that support the builders' yards and, you know, the garages and the shops and all this stuff. It supports about 250 people. Like I said, that's based on government figures, kind of calculations. And millions into the local economy each year, again, from the projects we're doing and from the people, you know, the visitors that come to those projects and from the students that live in our places and spend in the local economy. So there's definitely a big impact that we're having from a financial point of view in the economy. And certainly, hopefully, we're having a positive impact on the
I love it. Yeah, something that gets me really excited about Stockport, and nice to see you as invested in Lancaster. That figure about, you know, kind of employment or job creation is really interesting as well. It'd be nice to think that, you know, all of that money and stress and time that we're investing would be repaid with councillors and planning departments looking favorably upon us, but that's probably a different discussion for a different day.
You're at risk of getting me going for about the next 5 hours whinging about planners and councillors.
Coming up for you guys that you're excited about? You've got another book on the horizon. You mentioned that you've got HMO portfolios that you're thinking about buying. Where do you see the business going? What are you most excited about?
I think it's just really delving into, again, everything that sits at that intersection of kind of property and well-being. So there's, like you just said, there's the student HMO portfolio side. There's more service departments and more kind of leisure. Who knows whether there'll be another hotel or not, we'll see. But there's more exciting projects there. There's the book, which really focuses on, you know, the human well-being side of things. And it's really just exploring and diving into all those different aspects. And I suppose our challenge as kind of the business owners is we love moving forward. And it's to make sure that we're getting the people in, you know, into the business to say, okay, we'll run and operate all this stuff, you know, successfully as we can.
Makes sense. And very exciting for you both as well. You must be pleased. You must be, yeah, there's a lot going on. I'm sure maybe some days it just feels like, you know, well, we just need to keep our head down and charge. But if you take a moment to look up at what you've created, there must be a sense of pride and achievement there.
Well, that's very kind of you. I think you don't do your head's down the whole time, and it's not until you do something like this and you're like, oh wow, well, 6 years ago, what did we do? Getting the kids to school most days is a real thing. So I think, you know, if we do anything else, that's brilliant. It's exciting, and it is to actually sit back and think, oh my goodness, we have actually achieved, and it's just from us, the two of us, in the last 6 or so years. It's
awesome. Yeah, well, I've had a blast catching up with you guys. Thank you so much for coming back and taking the time to share that with us. I'd like to say, hopefully it's not 5 years until we speak again. I know it won't be 5 years until we speak again, but until you're back on the podcast, who knows? So for today, I just want to say, you know, from everyone else looking in at what you have achieved, there should be that sense of pride and achievement, because it's phenomenal, you know, not just the portfolio that you've created and the freedom for yourselves, but the impact that you're having on other people. It's really nice to see, and it does absolutely get noticed in the industry. I think you're having a much bigger impact than you maybe even realize. So I take my hat off to you, and I'm thrilled that you've had the chance to come back and talk to us about it again.